Welcome to episode 1464 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. In the previous episode, Thomas found himself caught between everything he had come to believe about Jesus and the one reality that seemed to contradict it all, the cross. He had watched Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead. He had heard him declare, "I am the resurrection and the life, and I am the way and the truth and the life." Yet now, the one who had commanded death was himself dead. Unable to reconcile the evidence, Thomas withdrew to think, and while he was gone, the risen Jesus appeared to the other disciples. When they told Thomas what they had seen, he desperately wanted it to be true, but he could not make their experience his own. He needed the resurrection to be real enough to withstand examination. So he made the declaration that would follow his name through history. Unless he saw the wounds for himself, he would not believe. Then came 8 days of waiting. Acts of the Apostles, Part 3, Chapter 4.
8 days. I want to be precise about what those 8 days were like, because they matter for understanding what happened at the end of them. The others had seen him. They had told me. They had told me with the particular urgency of people who have witnessed something they cannot fully contain and cannot stop needing to share. And I had listened, carefully, the way I listened to everything, noting the details, cross-referencing them, looking for the inconsistencies that usually appear when a story is constructed rather than experienced. There were no inconsistencies. 10 witnesses, each account essentially the same. None of them smoothed into agreement in the way that fabricated accounts tend to smooth. The kind of unanimity that is more credible than perfect coordination, because it retains the individual texture of 10 different people describing the same event. I knew this, and I still held to what I had said, not out of stubbornness, because the evidence I was being asked to receive was the evidence of 10 other people, and I had spent my whole life learning that the evidence of other people, however reliable those people were, was not the same as direct knowledge. I was still in that position, holding the witness testimony at one remove, unable to close the gap between what they knew and what I knew, when the gap closed itself.
I thought he was the gardener until he said my name. And then I looked at him and there was no doubt.
He walked with us all the way from Jerusalem to Emmaus, and our hearts burned within us as he opened the scriptures to us.
The doors to this room were locked, and yet he came into this very room and appeared to us.
He came through the locked door. The door did not open. There was no sound of entry. He was simply present, standing among us, the way he had been standing among the others 8 days before, in the same room with the same locked door, as if the architecture of the space had no particular claim on where he could or could not be. He said what he had said to them, "Peace be with you," and then he looked at me. I want to try to describe what that look was like, and I find that I cannot do it to my satisfaction. Not because the memory is unclear. It is, if anything, too clear. The way certain moments remain in the mind with a sharpness that does not soften over decades. But because what the look contained was something I do not have adequate language for, it was not surprise. He was not surprised to see me, and he was not surprised that I had not been there, and he was not surprised by what I had said about needing to see the wounds. He knew all of it. He had known all of it. And the look was, I keep returning to this word, patient. Not the patience of someone enduring something difficult. The patience of someone who had all the time that existed, and was choosing to spend some of it on Thomas. He spoke directly to me. He said what I had said, almost word for word.
"Put your finger here and see my hands. Put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe."
He had heard me. Of course he had heard me. He had not been in the room when I said it, and he had heard me. I did not touch the wounds. I want to be clear about this, because the tradition that developed, Thomas the Doubter reaching his fingers into the wounds, requiring the most material possible proof before he would believe, is not what happened. He offered. He stood there with the wounds visible, with the offer on the table, and I did not take it, because I did not need to. This is the thing about examination that I have been trying to explain across 4 episodes now. The goal of examination is not to accumulate as much evidence as possible. The goal is to reach the point where the conclusion is secure. And I had reached that point. Not gradually, not incrementally, but all at once. In the moment he looked at me, in the moment I heard him repeat my own words back to me from a room I had not been in. In the moment his presence in that locked space made the same logical demand that Lazarus walking out of a tomb had made, and the same demand that the consistency I had observed for 3 years had been making, and the same demand that the I am statements had been making since Bethany. Everything I had been holding in my hands and turning in the light to look for cracks, it all arrived at the same place at the same moment with a finality that required nothing more. And I said the only thing there was to say, "My Lord and my God." 4 words. The most compressed theological statement in the Gospels, and the most personal, not the Messiah, not the Son of Man, not any of the categories the tradition had prepared. My Lord, my God. The possessive before the title. As if the most important thing about the confession was not the content of it, but the relationship it named. He was not Lord in general. He was mine. He was not God abstractly. He was the God in front of me, in a locked room, with wounds in his hands, looking at me with the patience of someone who had been waiting 8 days for exactly this. He said something in response that I have thought about every day since.
"Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed."
I have turned this over many times. Some in reading these words, consider it a gentle rebuke, Thomas the one who needed to see, lesser somehow than those who believed without seeing. I do not think that is what he meant, and I will tell you why. He did not say, "You were wrong to need what you needed." He did not say, "You should have believed the others." He said, "Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believed." That is a statement about them, not a criticism of me. A blessing offered forward to everyone who would come afterward. Everyone who could not be in that locked room, who would have to receive the testimony of others rather than the presence itself. He was already thinking about the people who were not there, already extending the reach of what had just happened in this room outward, to people who would read about it in accounts written decades later, who would have to decide what to do with the evidence of witnesses they had never met. He was thinking about you. I have thought about this often when I am tempted to consider my need for direct evidence as a deficiency. He met me where I was. He came through a locked door a second time specifically for Thomas. He repeated my own words back to me, offered me the wounds, and waited, with that patience that was not the patience of endurance but of abundance. And then he directed my gaze outward, past my confession, past the room, toward the people who would have to do what I could not do for 8 days, believe on the basis of testimony alone. I have spent the rest of my life trying to be a faithful witness for them.
We often remember Thomas for what he demanded, but perhaps we should remember Jesus for how he responded. Jesus did not abandon Thomas to his doubt. He did not shame him for his questions or exclude him because his journey to belief took longer than the others. 8 days later, Jesus returned. He entered the locked room, looked directly at Thomas, repeated the very words Thomas had spoken in his absence, and offered him exactly the evidence he thought he needed. And then, something beautiful happened. Thomas discovered that he did not need to touch the wounds after all. The evidence had brought him as far as evidence could bring him. Standing before the risen Christ, examination gave way to recognition, and recognition became worship. My Lord and my God. Thomas's journey reminds us that the goal of honest questioning is not endless questioning. There comes a moment when the evidence has spoken, when the questions have led us to the threshold, and faith asks us to step through the door. Most of us will never receive what Thomas received. We will not stand in that upper room or see the wounds with our own eyes. And yet Jesus thought of us there. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Our faith rests on the testimony of those who did see, people like Thomas, who questioned carefully, examined thoroughly, and then spent the rest of their lives bearing witness to what they knew to be true. His story invites us to bring our questions honestly to Christ, but also to recognize when the time for examination has become the time for confession. My Lord and my God. To be continued.